Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today we have for you a brand new episode just come out from under the 60-day embargo period during which our participating newspapers have exclusive rights. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on October 1st of 2021 under the headline Astoria is Rich in Legends of Lost Gold and Hidden Treasure. Here we go. The city and environs of Astoria strike most visitors as the kind of place where pirate loot might be stashed away. Certainly it seems to have struck Steven Spielberg that way back in the early 1980s when the legendary pirate treasure film The Goonies was being shot there, but the town may actually have come by this impression honestly. There are still a few stories about hidden treasure in and around Astoria, not including the silver-screened Goondock story of One-Eyed Willie. And who knows, one or two of them may even be true. The Coxcomb Hill Cache. This story is actually not a pirate loot story, but it's not much less compelling for all that, and it's arguably more likely true than false, although the chances that the treasure is still around and discoverable are vanishingly remote. The story has its start in a rude cabin now long gone that lay near the base of Coxcomb Hill. Coxcomb Hill today is arguably the most prominent feature of Astoria. Perched on its top is the Astoria Column, patterned after the Trajan Column in Rome, jutting 120 feet into the sky from atop the summit, painted in a spiral pattern with a sort of pictorial history of the city and the state. Inside the column is a spiral staircase that you can climb so that you can look out over the entire area from its top. The view is spectacular. You really should go if you haven't. The column was built in 1926, financed by the Great Northern Railway and the heirs of John Jacob Astor. The story of the Coxcomb Hill Cache takes place a few years before construction got started, though, in the early 1920s. At that time, the hill was thickly wooded and outside the pale of development. Hard as that is to believe, as close as Coxcomb Hill is to the waterfront, the town still hadn't moved out that far. An old man had lived a quiet, frugal life in this little shack for many years, but by the early 1920s he had gotten frail enough that he couldn't really continue. Finally, he fell ill and was taken to the hospital in what was clearly terminal decline. The county assumed, based on the man's lifestyle, that he had no money to cover his hospitalization and anticipated burial expenses. The old man knew this, and it bothered him, so he pulled one of the nurses aside and assured her that he had plenty of money to cover his bill with. And as it became increasingly clear to him that he was dying, he added some details. He had $10,000 stashed in a coffee can, hidden in a hollow stump 50 feet from his cabin door. He'd hidden it away because he did not trust banks. This was actually pretty common in the 1920s. Many people had been ruined in the Depression of 1893 by losing their deposits when banks collapsed and never trusted a bank again. The old man would have been just about the right age for this to have happened to him. Readers who remember The Tower Treasure, the first Hardy Boys novel from 1927, may remember distrust of banks as being one of the details used to show the old, miserly, and curmudgeonly nature of character Herd Applegate. Well, the nurse passed the word along to the hospital administrators, who promptly sent a group out to find the hollow stump and retrieve the cash, and they found nothing. A more thorough search by a group led by the county sheriff followed, but again it drew a blank. Over the years since, the story of the Coxcomb Hill cash has gotten plenty of play in Astoria, and the area being open to the public, thousands of locals have roamed the slope over the years in quest of the treasure. Is it still there? Maybe. It's much more likely, though, that, as Ruby L. Holt points out in her book, one of the hospital staff members raced out to the scene ahead of the larger search party and snagged the can before they got there. $10,000 was, of course, a lot of money in 1923 or so, just over $150,000 in modern coin, but it's not such a large sum for its source to have been difficult to conceal or explain if someone did find it. Most likely, we'll just never know. The Flavel House Cache. The second hidden treasure story is much less likely to have any truth to it, but it's a far more romantic yarn involving a haunted house, a chest full of gold, and a character who had probably been called a pirate more than once by his business rivals. This quote-unquote pirate was Captain George Flavelle, one of the most important mariners in Astoria's history, and indeed the history of the West Coast at large. Flavelle first came to Astoria in 1849 as the skipper of a sailing brig. He must have liked the place because he was back the next year serving as pilot and first mate on a steamer and promptly applied for, and was granted, the Columbia River's first ever bar pilot license. Moving quickly, Flavelle amassed a small fleet, tugboats, and a pilot schooner, and ruthlessly fended off efforts by other swells to horn in on the bar pilotage game. Left with an effective monopoly, he jacked up his rates as high as he could and started piling up profits. Interestingly, he was able to maintain this monopoly for at least 10 years. According to his widow, he did so by being so fearless and so competent that shippers considered him worth the premium. This is probably the case. It's very difficult to maintain a monopoly over a public good like the bar pilotage. There aren't any barriers to going into competition, other than you have to be as good as or better than the monopoly provider. And apparently, at the time, no one was. By 1858, he had made so much money from bar pilotage that he found his time was better used managing his many onshore investments. So he hired a pilot to run his bar pilotage service and set about turning the money he had amassed into even more money. By the early 1800s, Flavelle was extraordinarily rich, but of course getting on in his years. And that is when he built the colossal Queen Anne-style mansion in Astoria that bears his name. This 11,600-square-foot masterpiece would be Flavelle's home from its completion in 1885 through his death in 1893, at the age of 69. His family continued living in the place for 40 more years, finally turning the property over to the county in 1933 as a museum which is now run by the City of Astoria. By the way, Astoria has another Flavelle house, built in 1901 by Captain George Flavelle's son, Captain George Flavelle Jr. Yes, he actually followed in his father's footsteps and became a sea captain, too. This newer Captain George Flavelle house, from outward appearances, looks like a much more likely place to find ghostly hauntings and hidden treasures, and there is quite a story connected with it. But it's rather a long story, so we'll have to save that one for another time. According to the legend, during the last 8 years of his life while living in his mansion, Captain Flavelle, senior, not junior, hid away a large stash of money somewhere in the old house. And after his death, supposedly the old captain's ghost wanders around the upper floors of the house during stormy nights, watching over his stash of sovereigns. Well, now, to be blunt, the chances that there's any truth to this story at all are vanishingly slim. Flavelle was a millionaire with a huge portfolio of investments. Now, why would he hide gold in the woodwork around his house? Granted, he might have gone a little loopy in his old age, but he was only in his late 60s when he died, and I haven't come across anything to suggest that he had lost his marbles in the run-up. Family members and friends and business associates of the old skipper have also, over the years, laughed this legend to scorn. They say it would have been very out of character for Flavelle to have done anything of the kind, and that none of them had or have ever heard even a whisper of a hidden cache of loot. Although, of course, if there were anything to the story, they would be foolish to admit it, wouldn't they? In any case, the curators of the Flavelle House are not about to let a bunch of rampaging treasure hunters into the place to scratch at the woodwork and thump on the walls in quest of secret passages. So, slim as are the chances of this one being true, even if it were true, no one would be able to do anything about it. Still, it's a fun thing to think about while exploring the museum, especially if you're lucky enough to be there on a blustery, stormy day. Key sources in this article included works by Ruby L. Hult, William Stack, and the Oregon Historical Society's Oregon Encyclopedia. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes come out once per weekday. usually around 6 a.m., so it won't be long before the next episode is up on your device and ready for you to queue up and listen to. So until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.